I'm really looking forward to doing this tour. I've been touring for the last couple of years doing acoustic versions of my, you know, my songs. And I just feel it's now time to, you know, dust down the synthesizers and drum machines and electric guitars and get back out there and make a racket. So, yes, I'm coming your way soon.
A long while since that first guitar your parents bought you. What, £3 was it?
It was. I still have it. I've still got
really?
It in my loft. Yeah, I get it out every so often and dust it down and give it a little play. So, yeah, someone once asked me, you know, which guitar, because I've got lots of them, which guitar would I, you know, run out a burning building with? And that's the one, you know, the one that means something to me.
Tell us about those early days in Glasgow.
It was wonderful. I mean, you know, it was tough, I think, looking back. But when you're a kid, you know, everyone in the environment you're in, everyone you know is in the same environment. So I was in a tenement slum with an outside toilet and no heating and things like that. But the camaraderie, the closeness that you had with all your neighbours and friends and stuff was wonderful. And it gave me a great grounding, you know, kept my feet fairly firmly stuck on the ground and stood me in good stead for much later on in life.
Didn't you play the guitar in the school folk club?
I did. It's the only place that I could go and play the music. You know, I had to join the folk club and I was not interested in folk music at all. So I ended up sitting with my guitar and a bunch of guys, you know, all sticking their fingers in their ears, singing, you know, Scottish laments. And it's the only way I could meet someone else who had a guitar. And of course, as soon as you meet someone else with a guitar who's kind of like-minded, you've got yourself half a band. You know, that's the nucleus of a band there.
So were you dreaming then about where you wanted to be?
Yeah, funnily, when I go back to Glasgow, where I'm from, and I find myself with a few spare hours, I'll jump in a car and I'll drive back to the streets that I used to haunt, you know, when I was a kid. Not for nostalgia's sake, but just to remind me that that's where I used to walk around as like a 10, 11-year-old with a guitar strapped to my back, dreaming of getting what I've got, because you can get quite complacent about what you have in life. And I go back there and it's an absolute reminder that this is what I wished for and I was incredibly lucky to get it.
Forgive me for making it sound as though I'm skimming through your career. It's been a fine career for you, Midge, hasn't it? But let's just very quickly talk about some of the bands. Slick, first of all, when I heard that song Forever and Ever, I always thought, oh, hang on, Bay City Rollers, they've got a new hit out here.
Well, they did, because it was the same session guys who played it. You know, we turned up from Glasgow to London to make our first record with a great big truck full of equipment, and we walked into the recording studio, and that backing track was playing. And I thought it was the Bay City Rollers, but no, that's how they did it in those days. You turned up and you were just, you know, you were required to sing and nothing else. So I ended up singing this thing. So when it got to number one and I got the phone call telling me it was number one, I had a number one record, I felt absolutely nothing and I vowed never, ever to be put in that position again.
I love the hairstyle then as well, by the way.
I'd love the hair. I'd take it any style these days.
And then the Rich Kids, of course. You were pioneering new genres in music, weren't you, with all of these bands?
Well, yeah, the Rich Kids was the kind of punk new wave period, and I bought a synthesizer and integrated the synthesizer into the Rich Kids. So I had the vision then of what I wanted to do musically, but I didn't get an opportunity to do it until the Rich Kids broke up and we formed Visage, which was a studio project. And through working on Visage, ended up joining Ultravox, of course.
And Ultravox, of course, Vienna, one of probably the best known songs that didn't make number one.
Yeah, it's funny because people keep saying, are you really miffed with Joe Dolce? And I said, well, not really. I'm kind of miffed with the people who bought his record. And that was in the days when the charts reflected exactly what the British public were buying. So it was really, really diverse. But only in the UK would you find someone like, you know, someone buying a Joe Dolce record to put it to number one instead of Vienna.
How was life for you around about this time, Mitch? Were you able to lead a, I suppose, normal life? Because you were right in the public gaze, weren't you, all the while, constantly?
Yeah, you were in the public gaze, but, you know, you could stick a hat on and disappear. You know, I've always had a theory that if you want to be noticed, you can be. You know, anyone can. There's an air about you. You know, there's an arrogance about you that people can notice you anywhere. But there's equally so, there's a way of being the invisible man. You know, Beyonce can do it, anyone can do it. You put a hat on and you just blend in with the crowd. So you've just got to manage that side of so-called fame.
Band-Aid, Live Aid. I keep wondering why you haven't got your NITR yet. It's Sir Bob Geldof, but it's still playing old mid-year. OBE, though, let's not forget.
OBE, yeah, I think it's maybe got lost in the post or something.
Live Aid, of course, described as the day rock and roll changed the world, the biggest ever global charity event, raising over £75 million.
Yes, I mean it's quite a thing. I mean, it's quite a thing. But I'm kind of far enough away from it now. I'm still a Band-Aid trustee, of course, and will be until the day I die. So I'm far enough away from it now to look at it as an observer and look back and think, wow, that really was something. But at the time, you didn't really realise the size of the monster that you were creating. You know?
Mitch, the tour with Electronica. Tell us what we can look forward to.
Well, again, as I said, you know, it's time to dust off the synthesizer and the electric guitars. I'm going back out. I've put together a band specially for this tour, which features the Christians and Altered Images as well. So it's good value for money. So I'm going out there to play a lot of the old Ultravox things, some of the old Visage things, and some of the solo things. So a real interesting, hopefully, retrospective of, you know, if you've just landed on the UK from a distant planet, never heard of Midge, this is a very good way of being introduced to him.